How comfortable are you with new technologies that show up in the back of your ambulance? Well, we're going to be talking about that with EMS educator and expert Kevin Colopy as we discuss EMS and medical technology. If that's what you're looking for, you found it right here on this week's episode of the MedicCast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
This is the MediCast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the PodMedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of the MedicCast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the PodMedic, and I'd like to take this opportunity to just say hey and welcome to this week's show. We've got a great special segment coming to you from the Physio Control Podcast Studio at EMS World Expo again this week. Before the conference kicked off, EMS leader and educator Kevin Colopy reached out to me to see if I wanted to do a special segment at the conference on EMS and new medical technology. I told him sure, and he came by to chat with me on the show there. We talked about how EMS providers need to be open to new trends in technology when it shows up in the back of our ambulances. So stay tuned here to get some tips on staying current and comfortable with new technology in the field. Before we get to that, though, I do want to make sure of a couple of things. You need to check out the links and additional information and resources that are available for you over at the MedicCast blog. That's over at mediccast.com/blog. There's a show notes link at the top of the page. You can click that link and take it. It'll go right to the most recent episode. You can also scroll down there to previous episodes. There's also a search box so you can find things if you put in keywords there. But I want you to make sure you take some time and follow up on the things I talk about in the show each week so that you understand how it might apply or not apply to your own EMS practice and protocols. If you have a question and you want to get back in touch with me, you can always do that. You can email me at podmedic@mac.com. So shoot me emails with your comments, your thoughts on the show. Maybe you have a suggestion for a future episode or an interview idea or a question. Either way, I work to respond back to those emails and I'm going to get a hold of you as well. So I will respond back. So keep them coming. Also, don't forget all of you mobile device users out there, there is a free MedicCast app just for you in your device's store. Just head over there and check it out and download it. It'll bring the show to you right away each week. That's enough contact information and stuff. So let's go ahead and get on into this week's segment with Kevin Colopy, where we talk about EMS technology in the field, and that is coming up in just a sec. Hello and welcome back to another segment here for the MedicCast here in the EMS World Expo 2015 podcast studio sponsored by Physio Control. We're here in Las Vegas talking everything EMS, and we've got a lot of great shows we've recorded and more coming up. So we're looking forward to bringing you the best and brightest here from EMS World Expo. I have Kevin Colopy here with me, and Kevin, we're going to be talking about bringing new technology into the ambulance and why it's important for paramedics and EMTs to be open to learning and accessing new technology. But first off, tell folks a little bit about yourself and where you're from and what you do.
Sure. Well, I'm the Clinical Education Coordinator for AirLink Vital and Critical Care Transport. We are in Wilmington, North Carolina, which is the little finger that sticks off of the state out into the ocean. So we're a coastal town that has a river as well, and little neat corner of the state.
Excellent. So we kind of talked before the conference by email and I think Facebook messaging actually. Yep. And about what we were going to be talking about. And you suggested this topic as something that would be of interest. And it's in my nursing version of myself, I know that bringing new technology is a constant fight. But I didn't really think of it as a problem as much in the EMS environment, because typically EMS providers are younger and tend to be more receptive, you would think, to new technologies. I certainly see it in my podcast. They're a lot more receptive to downloading things on mobile devices and listening that way. But you seem to think maybe that's not necessarily the case.
Well, you have two different sides of the industry. You have the group you just described, which is certainly a growing force within our industry. You also have those individuals that have been EMTs and paramedics for 10, 15, 20 years, if not longer. I work in critical care transport, and my average provider has been in the industry for between 17 and 20 years. So they've been doing this for quite a long time. And in the last 4 years, we've done nothing but roll out new technology after new technology after new technology, everything ranging from point of care lab testing to video laryngoscopes to enhanced electronic PCRs to now we're looking at an all digital protocol book. And everything simple from you have people that say, you know, I'm 45 years old, I'm 40 years old, I want to have that physical piece of paper in front of me. And then I have my 23-year-old medics that say, I don't need a piece of paper, just let me download it onto my phone and I'm good with the protocol book right there.
Right.
And so you have to manage both groups with all the different sources of technology that you have. So I don't think it's necessarily a problem in the industry, but as an educator, it's something you have to be cognizant of on how do you explain the hows and whys of the change that's occurring to people that probably saw very little change and now it's just been explosive.
Yeah. And you talked about some of the things like the iStat and things like it, that, you know, the point of care testing systems for labs. You know, that was something that you might have been, you know, science fiction 10 years ago to
right.
an EMS provider, and suddenly this is something that's becoming very common, especially in the critical care transport marketplace.
Oh, absolutely. And even 5 to 8 to 10 years ago, you had paramedics who were drawing blood and delivering it to the hospitals, and you still see that now. And then you started to see point of care roll out, and they would get the results and they deliver them. Now, when iStats first came out, there was no competition. We used the Alere Epoch,
okay.
which is similar to the iStat, just a little bit different. Similar principle, just different company. And then there's, I can give you the physician or the nurse in the ICU or in the ER the results. And then what you're now seeing in the industry is not only am I going to get the results, but I'm going to use different protocols based on what results I have, or I'm going to tell the hospital what your reaction needs to be to this patient based on my lab results. So they've gone from asking the ER for permission to treat to telling them how they've treated and how they need to continue it. That's a complete paradigm shift for our industry.
It really is, and I find that that's not, you know, it's not just that. I mean, there's things like ultrasound coming into the field. There's new devices. Manufacturers like our sponsors, Physiocontrol, constantly rolling out new innovations for their product line to help us have that complete package of monitoring solutions right next to us. But that also means we had, in the last 10 years, capnographies come into the EMS system.
Right.
We're now looking at people using capnography for more than just tube placement. They're starting to monitor asthmatics and other people with continuous capnography. So there's all sorts of things that are continuing to be rolled out that are adaptations of technologies we've already been using.
Right, and think of now yourself as an experienced clinician. These are devices you didn't even think about talking about in your
right.
program. So you've been in the field, not only did you not get it in your original education, but you haven't talked about it or thought about it, and you're now trying to overcome the education gap that many of our students today are learning in the classroom. So no paramedic today is graduating from paramedic school without a complete understanding of a 12-lead ECG, capnography, pit crew CPR, a lot of evidence-based medicine, and even research. Well, those are four or five areas that weren't even in the classroom 20 years ago. So now our younger generation is coming out gung-ho and ready to go and add these changes. And imagine trying to keep up with all of them when you've been treating patients for so many years without all of these tools. Video laryngoscopy is a great one.
Yeah.
Many of the best paramedics I know who have been doing this for a very long time have never used a video laryngoscope. It just wasn't in the repertoire. So you tell someone who's a great intubator, they're wonderful at airway management, that this is going to improve their outcomes, you really need to help lead them to that conclusion. Because if I just hand it to you and I say, hey, this device, we use the McGrath at our program, I say, you need to use this on all intubations now, and you tell me, you know, Kevin, I've never had a problem. I've never had a problem intubating. Why do I need to use this? You really have to approach that conversation differently than the new paramedic who came out of the classroom hearing about video laryngoscopy, coming to the job saying, which one do we use?
Right.
Fully expecting that device to be there.
So that begs the question, you know, you got the McGrath, it's what you guys use. How do you approach getting that experienced let's call them a dinosaur medic, for lack of a better term. My friend Sam Bradley likes that term of dinosaur medic. But bring about their change in paradigm from, I want to use the old-fashioned, you know, light laryngoscope for direct visualization versus using something new like the McGrath EMS video laryngoscope.
Sure. So we were really fortunate. We were kind of able to do what I called a soft rollout. We trained everyone on it. We put it on the trucks. We did not require its use. We let everyone get used to the idea that it's here, knowing full well the compliance manager, myself, and our medical director that in 18 months to 2 years, it was going to be the gold standard and used on all intubations. But we knew if we put the line in the sand at the front end, everyone would fight it every step of the way. So we instead put all of our intubation data out there, all of our quality data. Said, here's the state definition, here's where we are, here are the tools that you have. And then we practice with all of them every quarter. My staff come in for intubations every quarter with me. They go into the OR every quarter. They come and do simulations with me, and they're going to do an RSI in every simulation. And so we started making them more and more difficult. And they practice with them more. And a lot of it is comfort with the new technology. I'm comfortable with this device in my left hand. You've put something new in my right hand that's new. I need time to get comfortable. Comfort with a new device does not come in a one-day CME.
Right.
Doesn't matter whether you do it for 2 hours or 8 hours in that day, you might be competent, but there is a difference between competent and competency. You need to be comfortable and demonstrate competency with it, and that means applying it in context. Sitting here and intubating 8 different heads with a piece of equipment does not help you apply it into the situation. So as they used it more and more in context, and they began to see its ease, then a couple of them tried it in the field, and they saw how easy it was. They saw how much faster they could approach their intubation and complete the process. And they started telling each other about it. So when we put that line in the sand and said, you now must use this first line, they all said, well, it's about time. It makes sense. Why would I ever use anything else?
Right.
So they became our champions of it by just letting them reach their own conclusions, by giving them the device, helping them play with it, practice with it. And then when they identified a struggle, you said, well, come in, let's look at it together and let's figure it out together what's going on, instead of saying, you know, Bob, this is supposed to be easier. You're wrong. It's not harder. You just got to get better with it. It's, well, let's figure out where we're all missing the boat, because maybe what you saw, we can all learn from. And you're empowering them that they still have knowledge to share with everyone.
I think that's a great way to approach it. And it is really getting them to buy in, and then they push the new technology into the field. Because they want to use it now.
Right.
They've found the need to use it and the benefits of using it.
Right. And we still see the differences in some areas. You know, we said we have point of care lab testing. If I go look at my 50 uses a month, 35 to 40 of them are going to be for my staff who have been in the industry less than 10 years. If I look at my clinicians who have been in the industry for 15, 20, a couple of them are pushing 30 years in the industry. That's an incredible amount of time. Well, they rarely use it, because they're so used to, in their practice, not having adapted it. And it would be really easy to say, okay, every intubation you have to do an ABG. Every trauma patient you have to draw a lactate. And just keep going down the line and saying, you have to. Well, they're just going to fight that. What we're still working on is get the buy-in, because we also want them to say, if I use it, I can provide care. There's a direct benefit, instead of, well, I'm just running labs because Kevin says I have to. That's never going to get buy-in. You have to have the action that it goes with it, the improved outcome that they can see for their patient that goes with it, that I think is so important.
It's the concept of mandating versus recommending with education.
Right.
And I think that you're right, there's pushback. I mean, we're seeing it right now from all the data that's coming out regarding long backboards and spinal immobilization.
Right.
And the data's clear, but we're still getting people pushing back saying, no. You know, this is not the way we should be doing this.
Right.
And the data doesn't support it, but that doesn't matter.
Right. Or they say, well, that's all well and good in my trip and fall at home, but at the car accidents, I don't have time to evaluate the spine. I just got to get off scene. They're still stuck in the dogma of load and go and do everything on the way to the hospital,
right,
not thinking of that 20-minute drive to the hospital, 10 minutes waiting for a bed in the ER. That's already 30 minutes on the backboard. I could have it a cubitus ulcer,
right,
already forming. Instead of, well, we actually have evidence that says take an extra 5 minutes on scene, do a spine assessment, and then if you need to put them on a backboard, there's a reason. We also do a terrible job backboarding people in our industry. That's a whole other conversation, because we all know 85 to 90, probably more percent of our patients that we put on a backboard is simply because the protocol says to. Yeah. They don't actually have spine injury.
It's not a very effective splint to begin with, and then when you use it wrong, it doesn't do a good job at all.
Right. There was a really cool study that came out, probably 5-6 years ago in pre-hospital emergency care, that looked at how effectively we immobilize patients, and they looked at the effectiveness of the three straps and the head blocks. And essentially what it said is something like 65 to 70% of the patients who we immobilized actually weren't immobilized when they arrived in the ER, so that the implementation was useless anyway.
Yeah. Well, it just means we need to work harder at implementing new technologies, but we need to do it smarter too.
Right.
And that's what I hear you saying. And so I think that as we continue to have this discussion, because technology is not going to stop rolling out, there's some amazing things I'm seeing here at the conference. I'm sure you're hearing and seeing things as well that are going to be the new technology next year.
What's really going to be cool is to see what happens with ultrasound and EMS providers wearing videos that the physicians in the ERs can see. And where those two technologies are going to go, we don't know right now. But how they get implemented is going to be so important to their success or potential fail, just like anything new that comes into the industry.
Right.
I think ultrasound is going to be very interesting to see. But again, we all need to do a lot of training on it to actually be efficient at it, proficient, and actually be able to affect change in our patients.
I know you're presenting here at the conference and doing things. What are some of the presentations or one of the presentations you're doing?
I just gave one this morning on elevated lactate being the next vital sign for pre-hospital care.
Okay.
And I have one later on this afternoon on how to recognize and manage and then react to the lost advanced airway. So what's your plan for when the ET tube comes out? Because the evidence says somewhere between 5 and 8% of pre-hospital intubations are going to be dislodged by the time you arrive at the hospital. Do you plan for that?
Excellent. Well, I highly urge anybody out there to check out, if they get a chance to see you at a conference, get into one of your sessions, because it's a highly valuable resource and you're going to learn a lot. But I'd also ask, where can folks find you if they can't get to a conference and they have a question for you about a topic or something we've talked about? Is there a way they can reach you on social media or any place?
Sure. I'm on Twitter at KT Colopy, and I'm on LinkedIn as well, linkedin.com/in/KT Colopy, and then I'm easily available, kevin.colopy@nhrmc.org, which is New Hanover Regional Medical Center.
Excellent, and we'll have links to all that in the show notes. But Kevin, thanks a lot for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
That's been great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And I want to thank all of you for checking out this segment here of the Medicast here at EMS World Expo 2015 here in the Physio Control Podcast Studio. Remember, you can check out all our segments that we've recorded from all our different shows here over at promednetwork.com. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the Medicast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show this week, and of course, remind you to follow up on all of the information you get in this week's show over at the Medicast blog. That's at medicast.com/blog. Over there, you'll find a show notes link at the top of the page. Go ahead and take a moment and follow up on all of the information and links to news items and more you find there each week. You can also sign up for our email newsletter that'll bring you those links directly into your email inbox each week if you want. There's a form on the right-hand side of the page. Just go ahead and fill that out and you can get the Medicast newsletter for yourself. I also welcome your comments and suggestions by email. So if you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. Send in your ideas for news links, ideas for future show topics or interviews, whatever comments you might have. I really do look forward to hearing from you, and I'll make sure I get back to you. I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, so please keep those emails coming. If you want to catch up with me on social media and some of the pages and sites out there, you can find me at most places under the handle PodMedic. So you can catch me over at Twitter at twitter.com/PodMedic or Facebook at facebook.com/PodMedic. Friend or follow me over there. Also, don't forget to check out our Medicast Facebook page. We now have over 5,000 followers, so head over to facebook.com/MedicCast. Click the like button on the top of the page and join the community over there. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the Medicast. Please make sure you spread the word and share the Medicast with your colleagues and students and friends in the EMS world. I'll be back here each week with new episodes, new interviews, news items, tips, and more every Monday morning to start off your EMS week. Tell somebody else about the MedicCast today. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. It's time to close out the show. Don't forget to thank our sponsors. And remember, folks, scene safety, BSI.